taking revenge too far. Hello. Hello, could I speak to Chris McCall, please? Who the fuck are we kidding? Mr. Brad Carter asked. This is Chris, said the cautious voice on the phone. Hi, Chris McCall. This is Stefan from Flick's Video in Wood River. You've got a few videos checked out with us that are more than a week overdue now. Any idea when you'll be able to bring those back? Chris replied with a short pause and then a heavy, exasperated breath into the phone. Mr. Tompkinson? I haven't rented movies from there in more than a year now, Chris replied. Oh, well, maybe a family member used your card then. I don't think so, he said. Some people have been messing with my accounts everywhere for the past year. They must have checked out videos under my name. Oh, really? Well, I remember the guy that checked these movies out. Tall, skinny guy, right? Yeah, that's probably him. Well, I have a surveillance video of him checking out the videos here. You do? Yeah, I said. Maybe you could come down here sometime and identify him to us. Could I come down right now? Chris asked, sounding more excited by the moment. Sure, that'd be fine. I'll be here until midnight. I'm leaving right now. I'll be there in just a few minutes, he said, and then hung up the phone. I'd never worked in a video store in my life, though, and I didn't check out any videos under Chris's account either. I was several hundred miles away from Chris at the time, sitting on the floor under a payphone in the Indianapolis Greyhound bus station. My friend Zach was on the phone and had dialed Chris's house with his three-way calling. I can't believe he actually believed it all, I said to Zach. The guy at the video store is gonna think Chris is on crack when he comes in here. I've got an idea, I said. Call the video store. After a quick call to information, the video store's phone was ringing. Thanks for calling Flex Video. This is Shane. You're gonna die, Shane, I blurted out. Both of these videos I rented are messed up. This is fucking bullshit, man. I can't believe you rented me this garbage. I'm coming to the video store and I'm gonna kick your ass for wasting my time. Okay, first of all, you need to stop threatening me, Shane replied, trying his best to be in control of the conversation. Do you sell all your customers' faulty videotapes? When did you rent the video, sir? Earlier today. Don't you remember me? My name is Chris Tompkinson. This is pointless even talking to you about it. I'm going to hang up, drive over there, and kill you! If you threaten me again, I'm going to call the police. Go ahead and call the police, I yelled, making several people in the bus stop turn to look at me. I hope the police are there so I can have you arrested for scamming your customers. I'll be there in a few minutes. When I come in there and tell you that my name is Chris Tompkinson, you better be ready because I'm going to jump over the counter and pulverize you. Zach disconnected the line, and we all laughed together over the potential outcome of the confrontation that was about to occur. I would have given anything to see what happened, especially if it involved a fight or an arrest. Unfortunately, both Zach and I lived too far away from Chris to be able to witness the mayhem. At this point, we had been harassing Chris for almost a year. It started out as simple revenge, but slowly evolved into our favorite pastime. Both Zach and I had lots of free time to spare, and pulling hilarious revenge-style pranks on Chris eventually became daily routine for us. Each day, I would call Zach, and our conversations would usually begin with something along the lines of, "What should we do to Chris today?" A couple of years earlier, Zach, Chris, and I had all been friends, but we later found out that Chris had been stealing things from us. Chris later admitted to a mutual friend of ours that he'd stolen cassette tapes from my house and video game from Zach's. Then the first few months of harassment, we regularly called Chris and asked him for reimbursement for the stolen items, but he always refused. After a while, we stopped asking, but continued with the revenge. Chris attended a university in Illinois, which is where he experienced most of his grief from us. We called everyone we could think of to try and interfere with his life. We called every... Fuck! Campus security ended up being a regular visitor to Chris's room because of the things we did to him. From calling in anonymous tips about drug use in his room to framing Chris for his crimes that students would end up reporting to security. Chris became very well acquainted with the campus security officers. Campus security, this is Derek, the man on the phone answered. Hello, my name is Roy, and I'm elderly, I shouted in my best old man voice. Okay, how can I help you? I need you to have Chris Tompkinson arrested immediately. He assaulted me today as I was walking through campus. What did Chris do to you? He dropped a cinder block on my head from his window, just as I was passing beneath the Van Buren building. A cinder block? That's right, young man. I responded, pressing the mute button on my phone immediately afterward so he wouldn't hear me giggling. How could you possibly know it was Chris? He lives on the 5th floor there. Because I looked up after the cinder block hit me and Chris and his roommate were pointing and laughing at me. Listen, you need to stop calling here about Chris. We're getting tired of your calls. If you keep it up, we're going to have you arrested. Eventually, security stopped taking our calls seriously, and Chris stopped answering his dorm phone at all, so he resorted to calling the rooms of everyone else on his floor. I ended up with a directory of students at his school, which included their phone numbers and which rooms they were in. We called just about everyone that was in his building, especially the people who were on the same floor as him, hoping to start some sort of confrontation with them. Hey, is this Gary? We asked one guy who lived just a few doors down from him. Yeah, this is Gary. Hey, this is Chris Tompkinson in room 255. I mean, 525. I'm not ready for this, and I'm sick of you looking at me like that whenever we pass in the hall. If you don't cut it the fuck out, I'm gonna knock your teeth in. Who'd you say this is? Chris Tompkinson. I'm in room 525, and I don't want you looking at me anymore. Got it? We pulled the same scenario with about a dozen different students in his building. Some were afraid of the confrontation, others were pissed and wanted to immediately come to his room and either talk it out or fight. We called up girls in his building and confessed that we had crushes on them, insisted that we were destined to be together forever, whether she wanted to be or not. We did the same with guys. We called his teachers and accused them of favoring other students over him, and offered to pay them for better grades. We called other students and begged to be invited to parties, saying we'd never been to one before. Things got so bad that Chris's father ended up giving an interview to a local newspaper because of the harassment, where he told the paper that we'd really ruined Chris's social life. We called up every business in the area and canceled his membership cards, claiming the card had been stolen. Renting anything from a video store or a library for Chris became a hassle, since he would usually have to reinstate the account each time he went in. Figuring he was probably using his roommate's cards, too, we also routinely canceled those. We canceled Chris's credit cards, put holds on his bank account, canceled his calling cards, and even set up new calling cards that we could charge our long-distance calls to. Quite a bit of the harassment towards Chris ended up being charged to his own phone bill. We put ads in the paper about once a month selling things for Chris. We had set up really good deals on things like apartments and automobiles, then list Chris's dorm number for them in the classified ads, causing his phone to ring all day. It was common for Chris's answering machine to contain a message explaining the ad in the newspaper has been a mistake. Kind of like RBCP's voicemail now. Eventually, the newspapers stopped allowing us to place ads using Chris's phone number since he never paid for the bills that arrived for these ads. So we started placing ads for other students at the university. Only we would be sure to write in the ad S for Chris Tompkinson, room 525. Sometimes we'd call the student who was receiving all the calls and explain things to him. Hi, this is Chris Tompkinson. I placed an ad in the classifieds for a boat I'm selling, and I put your number in the ad. Why would you put my number in there? The student would ask. Because I need my line to be available in case my mother calls. Anyway, what I need you to do is write down all the messages that people leave so I can call them back. I'll come down each evening to collect the messages. Or you can just bring them up here for me. What? I'm not taking messages for you. I don't even know you. Not one person we did this to was nice enough to write down the messages for Chris. We even tried this with a few of his teacher's numbers and with campus security, but no one would cooperate. When Chris went home to his parents for the summer and holiday breaks, we would shift our harassment to Chris's neighbors and the businesses around town that him and his parents used. We started calling up all the neighbors that were within a few blocks of Chris's house, making outlandish claims to them. Hi, is this Miss Phillips? We would ask a neighbor of his that lived on the other side of the block. Yes, it is. Hi, I'm Chris Tompkinson. I live at 8714 Bauman Street. This is a little embarrassing to admit, but the other night I was passing through your yard and I thought it'd be funny to piss on your doorknob. So I did. I told my mother about it and she insisted that I call you and apologize. You what on my doorknob? She asked in disbelief. I peed on it. It seemed funny at the time, knowing that your hand would touch it. I'm surprised you don't see the humor in it. I did it to the house next door to you, too. Anyway, I'm sorry for what I done. And you may want to wash your hands and your doorknob since it's got pee all over it. I can't believe this. I should call the police on you. These conversations with his neighbors would go on and on like that. We would confess all sorts of vandalism and other crimes. Even the ones that didn't call the police or visit his house probably looked at him differently after our calls. We even checked the police logs in the paper a few times for thefts, then called up the police who had been the people who had been stolen from and confessed that we were the ones responsible. We apologized but said that we couldn't return the stolen items since we've already sold it for drugs. We were always happy to give these people Chris's name and address, but would ask them to please just accept our apology and not involve the police. Chris's parents, tired of the bizarre phone calls they constantly received, tried changing their phone number, but we always managed to get the new number by calling the phone company and impersonating Chris's dad. Within a day of the phone number changing, we would have the new one. Then we could call up various classified services that we had ads with and update them with his new phone number so he wouldn't miss any calls for all the things he was selling. Chris's parents would password protect their phone line, but it wasn't too hard to fool the Ameritech reps into giving us a secret password on the line. Once we had that, we could change the password to something new, meaning that when Chris's dad called the phone company to make another change on his line, he wouldn't be able to since he didn't know the password. We doubted that he was as savvy at tricking the Ameritech reps out of his account password as we were. He would be completely locked out. We ordered all kinds of custom services to his line, such as call blocking and speed dial, which increased the amount of their monthly phone bill. We canceled his calling cards and ordered new ones that only we had the PIN numbers to. Then we used those calling cards to continue to caress Chris without the long-distance charges. We even managed to forward his phone numbers overseas once to some random person's line in Germany. We filled out hundreds of magazine subscriptions for Chris, checking Bill Me on the subscription cards that I took out of magazines at the library. This meant that either Chris had to try and ignore the two or three magazines arriving at his home each day, or he had to call and cancel each one of them. Not only did we fill out the cards at Chris's address, but we also filled them out with his neighbor's addresses too, but still using variations of Chris Tompkinson's name. So besides having 100 magazines per month arrive at his door, he also had a neighbors occasionally dropping by to bring him his misrouted mail. After a while, the magazines would start sending letters to Chris, demanding payment for his subscriptions. And since magazines love selling their customers' information to other companies, this resulted in more junk mail for Chris and his neighbors. We filled out dozens of credit card application forms for Chris. Every time I walked through a store and noticed an application on the counter, I would grab one, fill out Chris's information on it, and mail it in. He either got a lot of unwanted credit cards or a lot of letters of denial. Either way, I'm sure applying for that many credit cards didn't do much for his credit rating. After the summer was over and Chris went back to college, we forwarded all of his parents' mail to his dorm address. After they fixed that problem, we started forwarding all of his dorm mail to his grandparents' house. Then I'd follow all of his grandparents' mail to a random person in Alabama. Back then, the post office didn't send confirmation letters to people when their mail had been forwarded, so a person wouldn't know that it had been forwarded until they happened to notice that they hadn't gotten any mail in the past couple of days. About once a month, I'd fill out a new change of address card, forwarding Chris's mail to a new place. Sometimes I would fill out several at once, causing Chris's mail to cross the country several times to random addresses. I'm not sure if Chris and his parents ever tracked down their mail when I did that, since it was forwarded to so many places. Chris and his college roommate, Ryan, went through several answering machines because of this. Whenever we called and they didn't answer, we would try to guess their answering machine's remote access code. The first machine was easy since it was just a two-digit code. We had to sit through dozens of messages of people calling about our fake newspaper ads, but if we waited long enough, we'd find an occasional gem. We'd sometimes hear messages from the campus security or the police regarding their investigation of us. And sometimes there would be messages from his friends and family, some of whom even left their phone numbers. Any personal information people left about themselves would go to my extensive collection of notes on Chris, so we would begin harassing those people as well. When a police officer left a message for Chris about our harassment, we called up the police station to have a word with him. "This is Officer Bailey. Hey, this is Chris Tompkinson. You called me a few days ago about these people harassing me." "Hi, Chris. How's it going?" "Great. I just wanted to let you know that since you've been too incompetent to capture Alex, I did it myself. I caught him in my building today, and I got him tied up right here." "You're holding him there?" he asked in disbelief. "Chris, you can't do that. Just hurry up and send one of your goons over to pick him up before I beat him any worse than I already have. You know the address." And with that, I hung up, hoping to keep the conversation short enough so that Officer Bailey wouldn't be able to figure out that I wasn't Chris. Soon after this, a new answering machine ended up on their line. This one had a 4-digit code, and it took us weeks to crack it. During one attempt, Chris picked up the phone. "What do you think you're doing?" he demanded. "Hacking your machine," I said happily. "Alex, listen. If I replace your cassette tapes or give you some money for them, will you quit doing this?" "No!" Zach and I both screamed and hung up on him. And there's a very nice illustration by Sacker Robot. Although, you probably don't have the book, so... fuck you. The new machine lasted just a few weeks before they unplugged it from their line, once they noticed that we were checking it regularly. For a month, they didn't have a machine on their line, until one day a new one reappeared that didn't allow remote access. At the same time, I was hacking Chris's answering machine. I'd been hacking into voicemail boxes belonging to random people in Indianapolis, too. Fuck that name. I learned how easy it was to call the owner of a box and tricking them out of their voicemail's PIN number by claiming to be an employee of the voicemail company. Once I had the PIN, I could lock them out of their own box and play with the features on their account. One company had an interesting feature to notify the customers of new voicemails. Once a message was left, the system would automatically call the customer at home and play their messages for them. Where the fuck am I? Oh, there. But just to make sure the correct person answered the phone, the system would require the customer to enter their secret PIN. The system could be configured to call the customer back every 5 minutes until the correct PIN was answered. I used this company system to harass Chris and everyone related to him. I would configure a person's voicemail box to call Chris every 5 minutes, prompting him for the PIN. Since Chris didn't know the PIN, the system would continue to call back for days. 24 hours a day, the system would call Chris's dorm, driving him and his roommate mad, and it wouldn't stop until the owner of the voicemail noticed that their account had been hacked and changed their PIN. We also set up other voicemail boxes on the same system to call his parents and other friends of his. None of them had any way of knowing what company was calling them or how to stop it. Whenever a customer locked us out of their account, we had another one ready to take its place. After just 2 months of this, the company removed the callback feature from their system. I guess that it was our fault, since we were causing several of their lines to constantly dial out at all hours of the day and night. Also, many numbers we were instructing it to call were long distance, so the company probably noticed the huge increase in their phone bill, all happening from hacked accounts. When we found out that Chris had taken a job at his school library, we began placing ads in the newspaper for items using the library's phone numbers. Most of the ads we placed were for cars for sale and houses for rent, since those generated the most calls. We also placed a few ads for library items that Chris was selling, such as books for 25 cents each, computers, and the card catalog. The library had 6 different floors, each having their own phone number and being able to transfer calls to Chris's extension. This greatly extended our ability to place ads, since a newspaper would allow us several ads on a phone number for blacklisting the number for non-payment. The other librarians, inexperienced with our harassment of Chris, were usually willing to hand us personal information about Chris if we had an appropriate story prepared. We easily got his work schedule from a different employee each week. Then we began harassing students about their overdue books. "Hello?" the girl answered. "Hello, is this Ashley?" I asked, looking at the student directory. "Yes, it is." "Hi, this is Chris McCall at the campus library. You have a few overdue books with us, and those need to be returned immediately. Your late fees are up to $78. "What?" she screamed. "I don't even have any books checked out with you guys." After confirming her information, I said, "Ashley, it's obvious that you're lying to me. Quit being such a deadbeat and take some responsibility for yourself. You need to bring those books back now, and you need to pay the $78 fine. If you don't, I will personally see to it that you're kicked out of the school forever." It never took long for them to start screaming at me or to start making threats. Ashley assured me that her boyfriend was going to kill me for talking to her that way, and dozens of other students also made similar threats of bodily harm against me. We were never sure if any of them followed through with the threats, but having constant scream of angry students coming into the library to yell at him surely kept them on edge. The library staff began receiving regular complaints about Chris Tompkinson. We confirmed this by calling a few random librarians and pretending to be students that were a victim of Chris's rude collection calls. Most of the librarians told us that they received calls like this about Chris every day, and they did their best to explain to us that they were prank calls. The harassment of Chris Tompkinson came to a sudden end when both Zach and I received packages from him containing the missing items that he'd taken from us, along with a letter of apology to each of us. When Zach told me that he'd received his, I called my parents to ask if anything had arrived in the mail for me, and they confirmed that I had a package with Chris's return address again. It's not that we felt bad for Chris for everything we'd done. It had just been over a year of steady harassment towards Chris, and this seemed like an easy way out of it since we were both starting to get bored with the whole thing. We're not sure if Chris gave us back the original items he took or he actually went out and bought replacements. At that point, I didn't even care about the music that he'd taken from me since I've moved on to new genres years earlier. And surely Zach didn't care too much about the video games. We only used the stolen items as an excuse to mess with him. We tried to think of a grand finale of something awful to do to him before leaving him alone forever. Or perhaps calling up everyone that we'd harassed and driving them nuts. Calling up everyone that we'd harassed and driving them nuts by personally apologizing to them for a year straight. But in the end, we simply called up Chris at work and thanked him for the packages, being careful not to apologize for anything we'd done since we felt it would take away from the hilarity if Chris felt that he'd made us guilty. Chris would never learn his lesson then. We never really found out how our actions impacted Chris's university life in the end. Did the other students continue to glare at him for the remaining years? Or did they maybe see the humor in it after a while and become friends with him because of us? We sure put him in touch with a lot of the students during our year-long campaign, so surely he made a few acquaintances and friends as a result. At least some of them must have thought the personal harassment made him kind of interesting. Maybe he even met his soulmate because of us. That's how I'm going to pretend this story ended. Chris met a beautiful girl one day when she came into the library, yelled at him for being so rude to her about her overdue books. After successfully convincing her that the whole thing was a prank, she saw the humor in it, and he asked her on a date. They immediately hit it off and dated regularly for their remaining years at their university. Upon graduating, her father offered Chris a job at his corporation. Chris and the girl married several years later, having 3 children and living happily ever after. You're welcome, Chris. And that concludes the chapter, Taking Revenge Too Far, from the book Phone Losers of America by Brad Carter. And Brad, I hope you're not too pissed that I said Tompkinson. But, you know, McCall, dude, fuck that shit. I'm keeping it real. And